Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's November 29th, 2013. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the interwebs. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Gobble Gobble Long.
Gobble Gobble. Are you stuffed, buddy?
We don't normally do a Thanksgiving. We go out to breakfast with my parents after the turkey trot, which I ran yesterday, by the way. And then we do breakfast. And then I just, Laura goes to work and gets her double time and time off or whatever they do to make it worthwhile for working on Thanksgiving, and then I come back here and work on Thanksgiving, and then but last night we actually went out with some friends afterwards and had a little turkey. So I did have a little turkey, but I did not stuff myself, so I'm still that svelte 166 pounds awesome specimen of a man that you know I love.
And you're in the turkey trot too. You know, we had a small thing. Our big thing is going to be on Sunday, because there's so many people in our family now that live in this area that they want to see some of their family on the other side of the marriages and of the relationships and all that. So we decided to let everybody just go do their in-law family ones, and we're going to do the big one on Sunday with all of my family. So we haven't really done it yet, but we had a small little thing for us on the actual day. But
see, that's really nice. Now, I don't want to get too political here, but because I know you're on Facebook, so you're not aware of this, but There seems to be a huge backlash this year about stores opening up on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, Jeannie told me about that.
You know, we specifically agreed as partners not to open the Ante Up store on Thanksgiving, so our massive amounts of employees can enjoy the day with their family. So we're not being yelled at, obviously, correct?
But, right.
What I find interesting about it is that how fixated people are on specific days on the calendar.
Yeah.
And the reason I bring it up is just because you're bringing it up that on Sunday you guys are going to have a fantastic family Thanksgiving, I assume, right?
Yep. Yep.
And it does not matter that it wasn't yesterday. I mean, I'm sure, I guess, given your choice, you would love to have had it yesterday when everybody else is having it. But You're still going to have that quality family time, right?
Exactly.
So it doesn't really matter whether it was on Thanksgiving or not. So that's what gives me the red ass in this whole thing. If people want to go shopping, let people go shopping. Those workers are going to find time to do their family time on their family time, and everybody's going to be happy. Let's just chill out, all right?
Exactly.
Let's not get too worked up about all these things in the world, including poker.
And it wasn't even just stores. It was everything, too, I was told. It was like people were just whining about just, hey, you shouldn't have to work at all, and that's the problem. And I'm like, okay, well, imagine how many people are going to be ticked off Friday morning when they wake up and don't see their newspaper on their porch.
Well,
or,
probably six, but
yeah, but you know what I mean. It's the same kind of thing. Area. Oh, you need gas on the way home from your in-laws because you're not. Oh, sorry, it's Thanksgiving. You can't pump your gas here. Sorry, you know what I mean. Of course, things have to be done. It's just ridiculous.
Well, that's what kind of drove me a little crazy. George Takei, who I love, his Facebook posts are always pretty good, but his gave me the red ass this week because he was doing the same thing. Oh, I can't believe that these stores are opening. It's terrible for their workers. You should spend the day with quality family time watching football. And I'm like, you do know that those football players are working, right?
People
selling the beer are working. The people at the TV booth are working. And get this, the people in the pro shops in the stadiums, which is retail, are working.
That's right.
That's all right. You can complain what you want, but just don't be illogical about it.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
But anyhow, so we're getting off on a tangent.
Yeah, no, let's get back
to poker now.
Back to poker, yeah.
I kicked it old school, Ante Up, last week before the holiday, Chris.
Uh-huh.
Hopped in the little family truckster and actually drove around the state visiting poker rooms, reminiscent of back when we did it 5 years ago when we started the magazine.
Yes.
you know, we've obviously been to a lot of these rooms several times since then, but I've never put together that big of a tour. It was like 940 miles on the little toy car, as my wife calls it. And it was kind of cool. I mean, it was nice to see all these managers again. And, you know, I remind them all, hey, you know, it's like 5 years ago. And then they all remembered it. And, you know, one even said, hey, can you guys even fathom 5 years ago that you would be on par or better than Card Player or Bluff? And I'm like, no, absolutely not. I never thought so. And so it was good. A little trip down memory lane.
Yeah.
And part of the reason I did it was because we had that great holiday charity classic over at Daytona Beach. You know, we talk about this on the show all the time. They do their really big one in May called the Deep Stack Charity Classic. And then the last couple years, they've been trying to build a smaller one in this time of year, November. And it's not so small anymore. They had 320 people, I think, this
nice,
year.
Nice.
You know, the Deep Stack gets 660 or so. So it's still the little brother, but it's still a massive charity event. And had a great time playing with that. Went through plenty of raffle tickets. Got nothing to show for it.
Oh, you didn't win this year. You win every year.
I know. I'm on a losing streak. This is two events in a row there that I haven't walked away with anything other than my dignity. but it was always a good time seeing those folks there, and you know, a lot of you know, old friends. You know, we see more at the Deep Stack Classic, but still saw a couple at this one that we always see at them. So it was really nice to play with that. And then you know, I barnstormed around the rest of the state. I'm not going to go blow by blow, but I do want to mention that it was my first time at Hialeah Park. You know, it's a world famous horse track that was like the place to be back in the day. I don't even know when the day was, but you know, capital T, capital D, the day.
You know, when Sinatra was around.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the flamingos and everything, and it fallen into disrepair and closed for a while, and then the owners brought it back and slowly built it up, running quarter horses so they can get their casino permit. And finally, this year, after a long wait, were able to open their casino with slot machines and a poker room. So this is the first time I've been down there since it opened. And wow, I was not prepared for what I saw. And I hate to say that because it almost sounds like, you know, when somebody sets you up on a blind date and you're like, wow, I did not expect you to be hot. Like, really? What do you think? I was going to be ugly? And no, I didn't think it was going to be ugly at all or anything. But it is, in my opinion, the nicest and most nicely appointed. There we go. Whew. Most nicely appointed poker room in South Florida now, I think. They spared no expense and put that together. The tables are super nice. Everything around it is really nice. They have a nice bar in there. I mean, you really feel like you're in you know, a top-shelf Vegas poker room in there, which is very, very interesting and very neat. And it's, you know, they really got a lot of stuff going there. They're about 5 minutes from the airport. They've got a train stop right outside their door that runs until 4 a.m. So it's very convenient to get there. So you can hop on you want to stay on South Beach and do the party thing, you know, which I always like to do, of course.
Of course.
Yeah, you know, you can hop on the train and go there and play poker and then hop on the train and go back. So they got a lot of things going for you. And the one thing I do want to mention, the poker manager there who's managed another room down there before, I knew him before, I stopped to see him and he's like, hey, check out this guy. And underneath the tables, Chris, were the cup holders. So they were flush under the table,
uh-huh.
And if you wanted to pull it out and use it, you pulled it out, and the cup holder, it sat under the table in between the two seats.
Wow.
So, you know, get rid of that whole thing. I always think this is kind of tacky, but I know why people do it, but I always think it's tacky when you go to a really nice poker room, and then the cocktail waitress comes over, and she's holding her 190 drinks that people ordered, and gives you yours, you give her your tip, and then she's got to, like, hold that tray and wander around from table to table looking for one of those little cup holder things and bring it back over, then slide it, stick it in there.
Yeah.
You know, it is what it is. It's not that big a deal. Until you see a better option. And this was really cool, I thought. And he said he designed them himself. I'm going to trust him on it. I have no reason not to believe him. But I've never seen him anywhere else. So, that's some new ingenuity, I think, in the poker world.
Well, I have the text here from you that night. It says, holy beep! Hialeah is nice! And I'm like, oh, nice. So that's how you pretty much worded it on the file here, too. Hialeah Park is nice!
Well, you know, it's one of these things where we've been to enough of these rooms, and in Florida, you know, I think for visitors, they don't quite understand this, that, you know, when you go to Vegas or these other places, Atlantic City, these are full-featured casinos. A lot of them are corporately owned, so they have a lot of locations. So, you know, they have a lot of money, or at least a lot of money, access to a lot of money to really do their rooms up nice. In Florida, you know, all these rooms are family-owned. Hylia Park is one of them. You know, they don't have the big budgets. They don't have, I mean, obviously, in South Florida you have slot machines, but other places around the state, but you don't have that. You don't have table games. So poker pays the bills, and it's tough to really make a room look amazing. I mean, almost every room makes a room look really good. But to make it look really amazing, I think is tough to do, and they certainly pulled it off. So
that's cool.
Color me impressed.
That's cool. Well, it's good to have you back. Good that you saw a lot of the rooms, and you know, while you were gone, I decided that you know I'm trying to play a little more, you know, whether it's for real or not, just because I, you know, I seem like we've been getting so busy with all the different ventures we do that I just don't have enough time to play that much anymore. So I said, well, one way I can play is, now they've got the app for the PokerStars site, you know, I could play late at night, like, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning or whatever when I can't sleep or whatever, and just play. And so lately I've been playing, I think I've been saying this on the show, I've been playing a lot of PLO and 5-Card Omaha and some other stuff, just trying to venture out into different games or whatever. And they actually have heads-up, like, PLO on there and you know, and it's all play money, obviously. We all know that. So you can't really take it too seriously. But, you know, after a while, you play this play money, you start to accumulate a lot of chips, you know, because it's, you know, they give you free chips to if you're broke. And then if you're not broke, you know, you just, you know, you play with these guys who don't really care. So I decided I wanted to play Omaha heads up because I wanted to play a lot of hands because they can never get the Omaha Zoom going. Or, you know, it's just there's not enough sure. people to right. to do a Zoom game. There's tons for all different levels of hold'em, but not for PLO or any other kind of Omaha game. So I said, I want to play a lot of hands before I go to sleep. So I'll play somebody heads up. And I get in there with this guy, and I'm just destroying him. And obviously it's play money. This isn't something. This isn't a brag or anything. It's because it's a joke that you're playing for play money. But he starts complaining. He's like, dude, all you do is check, check, check. And I started laughing, thinking it was Teddy KGB from Rounders. So I'm like, dude, you know, you're so overly aggressive. All I'm doing is keeping the pot. You know, I'm trying to. So I start telling him his tells. It's so obvious what you're doing and how poorly you're playing that I'm just not going to sit here and lose because you want to play like an idiot. But I'm like, come on, if I'm so bad, beat me, you know? And he couldn't beat me. No matter what he did, like I kept felting him. And then he's like, dude, it's play money. Come on. And I'm like, yeah, it's, so what? What are you, why are you playing then? Are you just playing so that you could just keep shoving and wasting your money and try to win a big pot? And then he refused to keep playing with me. He said he wanted me to keep raising and shoving. I mean, shut up. So, I mean, really, he refused to, he just sat there, he sat out and, like, wouldn't, like, play. And I'm like, here I am, I told you your tell, just like Mike did in Rounders, so you could adjust. And if I'm not challenging enough for you to beat, then why are you playing? Figure out how to beat me, because when the real money comes back, you're going to place people all the time who are checking all the time, and especially in Pot Limit Omaha, I don't want the pot to get so bloated that my draw doesn't make sense or, you know, or whatever. I'm like, and he just couldn't figure it out. And he was like scolding me on check calling when I had like a small draw or I just had top pair, top kicker, and, you know, it is Omaha, and I wanted to, you know, make sure on the turn that I had something that was worth redrawing to or whatever. He didn't care. He didn't want to play with me. And I thought, why are you playing poker? I don't care if it's play money. Why are you playing if you're not trying to get better and try to beat whoever sits across from you? It was driving me crazy.
Yeah, well, you know, it is because it's play money, I think.
Mm.
You know, not everybody has the same attitude towards it that we do, that you need to play and get better. Maybe that's his enjoyment, just shoving and seeing if he hits. No different than like the crusties at the 2-4 limit table, you know.
Yeah.
Just out there to play for the day and don't care whether they win or lose, don't care whether they're getting better or not. They're gonna play their cards to the end and go, oh golly gee, I won, and rake the chips in, and they're gonna go, oh golly gee, you beat me, and watch the chips go somewhere else. You know, so I get it. You know, it's frustrating, but I'm gonna guess that that's what it is, that he was interested in playing poker, he's interested in being entertained, and you were not entertaining him. You did not dance for him.
I know. And these are the people that you want to meet when you finally can play for money or when you're sure. playing live. You want them cashing in their Friday paycheck and just shoving their four, you know, $100 stacks that they have, you know, on consecutive hands without even looking at their cards. And I've run into plenty of players like that, and I always slow play until they, you know, then they shove, and then I call them with kings or whatever, and that's how you beat them. But I thought it was pretty funny the way he kept saying, all you do is check, 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 and he wrote it all caps, you know, with exclamation points.
Of course.
And I just thought, oh, man, this guy is Teddy KGB, you know. So I'm like, all right, and that's what I said to him in the chat, too. I'm like, all right, just like in Rounders, I'll play the role of Mike to your Teddy KGB, and here's what you're doing wrong, pal. And he's like, this is play money, man. It's play money. And I'm like, okay, well, then beat me, you know. And it was really frustrating. But I'm glad to be, you know, getting in some hands and stuff. No matter what, you know, no matter what the outcome is, you know, you just try different things. You think about. I think you might have been talking about this a few weeks ago about when you're playing with somebody and even when you sit out of hand, you say to yourself, that person's going to raise, that person's going
right.
to fold.
Yeah.
And so that's what I start to do now, too. I'm like, I know exactly what's going to happen in this hand. This guy's going to bet X, and this guy's going to call and whatever. And that's so I'm starting to work on that stuff again, too, just in case Florida gets on the bandwagon like all the other states. And you know. But I'll never play for big stakes online. It's just it's too crazy out there for me. I would just be happy with my grinding like I did when we first started playing online.
So what you're saying is, Chris, if you were an elected official... Darwin, help us all. And someone, an online poker pro, challenged you to a heads-up match for a lot of money, let's say like $170,000 U.S., then you would say, no, not going to play that.
Yeah, I would turn that offer down, I think.
All right. Well, you, sir, are no Erlen Wiborg, a Norwegian politician who is also a proponent of online poker, because he did accept that challenge. From PLO specialist Ola Odson Amundsrud. Pretty sure I nailed that too.
Amundsrud.
No, okay, so here's the story. It's people probably have heard about it. It was like earlier this month. We just haven't had a chance to get on the show. But online poker is illegal in Norway. So we have that in common with Norway.
Yeah.
Oh, sort of. So players can't play there. And Odson here said, you know what? I'm sick of this. I need to prove to you that this is a game of skill. It's not the chuck of luck. It's not, you know, guess the weight at the county carnival, which I hope they have in Norway, or I'm totally losing our entire Norway audience here right now. So I am going to challenge any Norwegian politician to play 10,000 hands heads up with me so I can prove to you that poker is a game of skill. And I probably thought that, hey, everybody was just going to chuckle and not do it right. But no, enters Erlen Wiborg. And, of course, it doesn't really work too much, I think, in my opinion, because he's
in favor. Yeah, exactly.
So he's just trying to help, I guess, get the word out, I guess. But, you know, it would be better if he was playing against a staunch critic of it that was clear. There is no such thing as global warming or that online poker is all luck. But they're going to do this, and I tried to check yesterday to see whether they've actually done it or scheduled, and I haven't. Good thing for Google because they help you translate Norwegian websites.
Yeah.
So, mighty hilariously, by the way. So I'm not sure when this is going to actually happen. Obviously, as you know, it has to happen outside of Norway because it's illegal, and you know, no one's going to jail over this. But so I bring it up because one, I think it's a fun story in itself. But we posted on our Facebook page when this first broke. Which U.S. politician would you most like to challenge to a heads-up match?
So are you asking me, or was it rhetorical?
Sure, why not? It's going to be a better bit if you actually answer me.
Anyone who's against it. It doesn't matter.
Oh, man, you're so boring.
All right, so what, John Kyle? I mean, I don't know. I mean, just...
He's retired now.
Yeah, he's retired. So, I mean, what point is... I don't know. Who else am I going to... Anybody who's against it, really. Anybody who thinks that, you know... Even if it could be... Somebody who's, you know... for it, but the problem with being for it, like you said, is he could be throwing the match just so, you know, somebody could say that, oh, he didn't really try against this guy, and, you know.
That's a very interesting point.
So yeah. It has to be someone who's against it who really believes that it is luck. So when you drub him after right. 10,000 hands, it's obvious. So, I mean, I don't know. Who are the biggest, you know, naysayers of online poker these days. Sheldon Adelson, maybe? I don't know.
Well, he's not a politician.
I know he's not a politician, yeah. though, but, you know, I have no idea, really. Republican, I would assume. I just don't know.
Our Facebook ones got the, you know, the rounded up the normal cast of characters. You know, John Boehner, John McCain, Mitch yeah. McConnell.
Yeah, maybe McCain. But even so, McCain's got skills. I've seen him playing.
So I think that's what's interesting, right? Yeah. You know, John McCain, I don't think, I could be wrong, but I've never actually heard him say that he thinks that poker is a game of luck.
Right.
I've never seen him say it's a game of skill either, so I guess we should make that clear. But I don't. He doesn't strike me as one of these people that's against online legalizing or regulating online poker because he thinks it's a game of luck. I think he's just opposed to it because of the other reasons that people are opposed to it. So that doesn't really work, I don't think.
No. It has to be someone who sees the game as chance, because that's what they're worried about. Is they're worried about people gambling away their money instead of developing a skill and becoming a better person and cognitive skills in their brain. And, you know, I mean, that when they think it's just pure, hey, just put your money in and that's it, those are the people that you want to target. So I don't know any, I don't know of any that are specifically against it for that reason. You know, usually that's what the line of questioning becomes when it gets to, say, the court system. You know, they start to say, hey, it's skill. These people should just like any other skill. That's why I should be able to do this. But those aren't the reasons people are saying they shouldn't be able to do it. And that's what, that's probably the flaw in this sort of argument or discussion.
You know, what I think is we're spending too much brain power trying to figure out who to play against, right?
Yeah.
I think what we need to do is set up an online poker politician Hunger Games. And we'll pick 20, you know, two from each state. Or district, and let them just like kill each other, and then the winner is the one that has to play heads up. And then just think of how effective this is going to be. We're going to get rid of 19 opponents of online poker, right?
Yeah.
And then the loser, or the winner, I guess. I mean, I'm sorry, not the loser. You know, winner is going to lose because he's going to play against a real poker player. And then we might get poker approved. I think that's what it's going to be.
Leave it up to you to hit the 13-year-old girl demo.
Heads-up challenge catching fire. That's what I'm going to call it.
You're really bringing in the young girls for the show today, buddy. What's next? You're going to talk about your Miley Cyrus collection, which I know you have.
It's very important to me, yes.
So I can't wait to see what happens here. I do wish the guy was against online poker. It'd be a lot better. But at least he did it. And, oh, wow, I guess Norwegian politicians make a lot of cash if they can pony up 170 grand.
You know, it's probably just like here in the U.S. Only the rich get elected. So,
man,
you know,
that's
maybe
crazy.
He made his money somewhere else outside of the off of the government teat.
All right, we have a listener spotlight this, you know, this week. Each week we spotlight a listener who has called our hotline, and we have one this week from the hotline, which has been a rarity lately.
Yeah.
That phone number is 813-448-1120, or if you emailed us at podcast@annieupmagazine.com. And if you haven't won anything in the past year from us, just like we do with Call the Floor and Hand of the Week, we'll send you something pretty cool. This week's sponsor is J-Design Playing Cards, the official playing cards of Annie Up. Check out Jay Design's great cards and more at classicplayingcards.com. And this comes from Sam the Alaskan Assassin.
Hello, this is Sam the Alaskan Assassin Hoger, UFC veteran, giving you guys a call, an avid poker player. I got a question for you. Whenever you're sitting there playing poker and you ask somebody after they make a big move, they make a big bet, say on the flop or after the flop or even after the turn, and you ask them, if I fold, will you show? When they answer yes, what are the indicative signs that they are bluffing?
First of all, I want to say I loved him against the Iron Sheik. Small match. People didn't see it because it was regional, but still very important. And I'm going to answer his question, because we always do.
Okay.
But first, I want to say, the bigger question here is, let's just quit this.
Yeah.
Can we just agree...
Stop saying it.
...to quit this, and the 20 people that still do this stupid thing, let's put them in the second Hunger Games that I'm going to arrange. You know, I was at this the charity event this week, right? And, you know, I try to have a little more compassion at the charity events because you get a different group of players, right? You get people that are not serious poker players, or not always serious poker players. You know, you get, you know, people that are just there to support the charity, and, you know, they're playing like it's a home game, or they're out with their buddies, right? So things are a little different, and I know that. I'm tolerant of that. I am a tolerant human being.
Oh, jeez.
If I keep saying it, I'll believe it, right?
Yeah, I was going to say.
But no lie, Chris, four times in the 4 hours that I think I was playing, I heard this. I've always a show, and then there's always this maniacal cackling laugh. And sometimes it was like, yeah, sure, no problem. And other times it was like, nope, you have to pay for it. So and every single time it was just ridiculous. You know, I don't really get what people are trying to say. Now, I know if you go to like the Daniel DeGrandes of the world, they're going to say, I don't really care whether they show or not. I'm trying to get them to talk so I can get a read on them. All right, great. If that's, yeah, you're some kind of like, you know, Google Siri voice analyzer kind of poker player, perfect. Whatever you got to do, right? But I think the problem with what Sam is trying to say is he's trying to figure this out. And if they say yes, how can you tell if they're bluffing? I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I guess... I mean, it goes back to the whole reading people in general, and you have to have a baseline, as our good friend Joe Navarro would say. So, I mean, if you're chatting them up earlier in the tournament and you ask them, hey, you know, is the sky blue? No. Well, now I know that he's lying, right? And then when I say, if I fold the show, no, you know, then I've got an idea, I guess. But I don't know. I'm not good at these parlor games, this, you know, Clue, whatever kind of board game the people are playing here instead of poker. So I guess I don't really have a good answer, but I hope you do.
Well, I'm so glad that you offered to answer when you had no good answer.
Yes, I know, isn't it?
That's a great business model we have.
Very
we should go
giving.
Forward with that, with all of our aspects of our business.
Very, very giving.
Okay, Sam, the Alaskan Assassin, here's what I'll have to say to you. Scott quoted Navarro. I will go to the original, Mike Caro, and a lot of the tells that he mentions in his books and his columns and that thing are mostly pointing toward genuine reactions.
Okay.
So if you can get someone to actually answer you, then you have to gauge what kind of an answer it was. Did it seem like it was a genuine smile when he smiled? Was it a genuine laugh? Was it a forced laugh? Did it seem like stress was making his laugh or his answer sort of go up a couple of octaves, that kind of thing? If he's worried and nervous, that's generally what will happen. So if somebody says, yeah, I'll show you, but they just don't sound the way they sounded before when you're just having a regular conversation with them, then you know there's some sort of strain there, and that means that he's probably bluffing. Not probably, but I mean, you can't, again, you have to go with the baseline like Joe would say, but really, if the person was so relaxed when he was talking to you before the tournament and they're just chilling with you and you could tell it's a regular conversation and then that's how he answers you when you say, you know, will you show if I fold? And he's like, yeah, I'll show you. And it's just normal conversation, then he's not worried about anything. And, you know, generally you would think, okay, he's probably got me beat. If he doesn't say anything at all, then it's hard because then you don't know if he's nervous and he doesn't want to speak to give anything away or he wants you to call and think that, so it's reversed. It depends on the player, too. If the player is a savvy player you've been playing with a long time, it's very difficult to actually get something out of them that you're hoping that would tell you something. But really, go back to the baseline, like Scott said, and then look for the genuineness, like Caro would say. If you make them laugh or smile and the smile seems forced, then the guy's worried and nervous about something, and what would he be worried about if he had the nuts? So that's the only thing I could think of.
Well, it's kind of a two-prong thing, right? Because if you get them to say yes or no, that doesn't really tell you what they have, right?
Right, right.
Just the fact that they're going to, hey, I'll show you. I mean, it could be, you know, the stone-cold nuts. It could be the biggest bluff in the world. And some people would say, yeah, sure, no problem. And some people would say, no, absolutely not. So at that point, then, that's what I think is so illogical about it. And I guess it goes back to just trying to figure out the inflection of the voice or how confident
exactly.
they are.
Yeah.
And, you know, if they're, you know, sitting there statuesque and trying to hold their breath because they're just going to burst because they're bluffing so hard, and you get them to say, oh, yeah! And then, okay, all right, I know he's totally bluffing then. But generally speaking, I think when people answer, they're very confident. Yeah, sure. Or no, it won't. And I guess that usually means that they have it, or they're just really confident about bluffing.
Yeah, see, that's what's difficult about it. Another thing, like a baseline too, if somebody clears their throat every time they're about to talk to you,
right?
And then they're about to, then they clear their throat. Don't take that as, oh, he's nervous, he cleared his throat, you know, because he always clears his throat. So you always got to know what this person is like regularly before you're asking such a question. But good luck with that. Let us know how it goes.
Of course, let us know.
Of course, every single poker player on the planet listens to our show, and they're all going to stop doing it now.
That's
so this,
true.
All this advice is useless, but there you go.
All right, find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game and not sure what the proper ruling should have been? Email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com, and we'll have our veteran poker room manager, Jody Russell, tell you how he would have ruled. This week's comes from our Missouri ambassador, Don Matisofsky. And he says, I'm in a 3-6 limit hold'em game. Three players see the flop. Player 1 checks, and player 2 goes all in for $1. Player 3 throws in $1, and then $2 more. Player 1 quickly raises to 6. The dealer stops the action and rules a string bet from player 3 and tells player that he can only call the $1 all in. The floor is called to explain why player 1 can't at least complete to the full $3 bet. The ruling basically came down that an incomplete bet, which is less than half, does not constitute action, and player 1 can only call or fold. Is this the correct ruling?
Jody says, I concur with the dealer and the floor person in this scenario. Player 1 already had a chance to act in this betting round. In limit poker, all-in action for less than half a full bet is not considered significant enough to reopen the betting to players who have already acted in that round. In player 3, if player 3 had completed the bet to $3, in a proper fashion, the betting would have been reopened to player 1. Yeah, completely seemed sort of textbook to me. Rule, good ruling, I think.
Yeah, I think what gets people tripped up about this is that the whole check with an option. You know, you check thinking that you still retain every right that you had when you first acted.
Yeah.
And that's not the case. I mean, obviously, a check raise is an effective strategy in certain spots, but you run the risk of checking. Whenever you check, you're not saying, oh, get back to me in a minute, and I'll let you know what I want to do. You're giving up your right to act on that street. Now, if somebody gives you the right back, then that's a different story. But if no one gives you the right back, you had your chance, and you didn't. So, and I think that's where people get tripped up. They're like, you know, hey, just because I check means I still have my full arsenal of rights. And you don't. So if you need to bet your hand, you need to bet your hand, if you're worried about not being able to bet your hand.
Yeah, that sounds right. Sounds good. The other thing, too, is the string bet. I mean, that's a good call there. You don't let them throw $1 in and then two more. That's it. That's the bet. That's the call now. And this isn't Hollywood. So a lot of stuff happened in that hand, but it was all sifted out pretty well, I think.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of the charity event this week, too. And again, I'm not picking anybody against charity. I'm not used to playing. But it's kind of interesting and kind of snicker under your breath kind of thing at how people – because, you know, poker is such a complicated game with the etiquette. You know, we tried our best in our Poker 101 classes to explain that, but you can't really get it until you experience it sometime, right? So there was a situation where a guy calmly moved chips into the pot and then made a second movement, like, it seemed like an hour later, but it was like, you know, 2 seconds, but in there. And then once the chips are down, and he's like, raise. And so everybody, well, I should say everybody, because half people probably thought that was completely...
Yeah,
perfect at the table, but the rest of us were like, And then eventually the dealer had to say, hey, I'm sorry, it's a string bet, you need to say raise. And then this is what I thought was interesting. His hand was, I did say raise. And she's like, no, I know you did. You just have to do it before you put the chips in the pot. But I did say race. And yeah, I felt bad. I really did. You know, poor kid. I'm sure he didn't really understand. He's probably going home donuts for, you know, I said race. And not getting the fact that you can't do it that way, because that's what they do it on TV. On movies and stuff. Yeah. So.
You know, it's funny when you get into that kind of an event. You know, you think that they might say something before the event starts, like, okay, everybody, here are the rules of the house, you know, and let everybody know over the intercom or something. But then the people who are actually in who know what they're doing are going to be like, you know, so they're hoping that most of the people who are actually ponying up money to play in this thing know these rules. But, you know, it's not too crazy to think that, you know, you could actually have the dealers tell everybody the rules. Because not everybody who sits down on a poker table knows to ask the rules. They think what they see on TV is right. So,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
But yeah, pretty interesting stuff.
That's
there.
That's an interesting point. Maybe some charities should do that. You know,
because it is a charity, not a regular tournament.
You right. Know? You know, we know some of you are not here every day and playing regularly. So there's a couple things that are a little different here than your home game, and here's a couple of them.
There you go.
You know, even if you do just a couple of them, you know.
Absolutely.
Interesting.
Absolutely. Okay, we have a new O'Malley's move this week. Can't wait to get to it. Here it comes.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I am Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we're seated at a $1-$2 PLO 8 game. The action's been fairly steady all night, and a lot of the players in this game are decent. We're 8-handed with a stack of 275, down 25. We've been at the table for a few hours now. The under the gun calls, plus 1 calls, MP calls, and we look down in the hijack at the ace of diamonds, queen of diamonds, 3 of clubs, deuce of clubs. We raise the bet to $8 and immediately regret this decision. All we have is speculation, and there are a ton of players in this game who love to see the flop. Cutoff folds, button folds, small blind folds, big blind calls, under the gun calls, plus 1 calls, and we are going to a flop with $30 in the pot already. The flop comes down, the king of hearts, jack of spades, 4 of clubs. Okay, we missed this one horribly, but it does get checked around to us. This is why position is so important in this game, and since we raised preflop, we're going to keep up the aggression. We could perhaps represent some big cards that maybe hit this flop. We make it $20 to go. Big blind calls, under the gun folds, and the plus 1 calls. Not the outcome we were hoping for, but the turn is the 5 of hearts. This is an interesting card. What makes things even more interesting is both players check to us again. Did I mention both players have us covered? So, with $90 in the pot and roughly $250 in front of us, what are we doing here?
All right, it's time for Hand of the Week, and this one comes from our old friend Mark up in Minnesota. He's our pro golfer.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And he, I like his signature line. Mark from Minnesota, previous swag winner.
Oh, nice.
I don't have to look it up.
Yeah, that's cool.
all right, but he sent a hand week anyhow, and he said he was playing up there at Canterbury Park in Minnesota, wonderful room up there. And the game is 1-2 spread limit with a $100 max bet, as he says, thanks to Minnesota state regulations.
So yeah, it's a little misnomer there when they say 1-2 spread limit. I'm kind of like, what, they can bet $1.75? You know, you start to think about the 1-5 spread limit of stud. Right. But, yeah, it means that, you know, you can only bet up to $100, right, I guess.
And yeah, technically it's a $2 to $100 spread. It's probably how it was listed on the board. But what it is, it's 1-2 blinds.
Right.
And you can never bet more than $100. So
that's so weird.
Yeah. I kind of like it for my game, you know.
Yeah.
I can push off hands. But and $100 is still a significant bet, in my opinion, for a 1-2 game.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
But yeah, traditionalists will never have enjoying up in Minnesota for that. All right, here's on the button. He says it's a $4 live straddle, and there are 2 callers before it gets to us. The one player right immediately act for us, and 2 before him. So 2 early position players are out, and then 2 okay. middle position players have called. And we look down at 10-10. Apparently, they are suitless because we do not have suits here.
Okay. Oh, that's cool.
Well,
no
I know
suits.
It's also part of the Minnesota regulations. You can't have the suits on the
card. So. Yeah, they're just pure numbers.
All right, we're going to assume that the suits will not play here. So, 10-10, we have a live straddle, 2 callers.
And I'll assume the 10s aren't suited. Okay.
Yeah.
So, let's see. There's a $4 straddle. That means that there's already 7 in the pot before we get the 2 callers. So that means now you have 15 in the pot, and it's live, and these guys are hungry to play because it's cold in Minnesota, and you know they want to bet as much as they can. They can't, so they're gonna want. So I'm gonna raise a significant amount here. I don't think like 3x is enough because you got 2 callers. I'm not even sure 5x is enough because you got that straddler, and you know he's a kook, you know. So I'm gonna make it like 25 to go. 10s are vulnerable. I'm certainly not set mining with them. I think it's a good enough hand to stay on its own if I can weed the field. So I really don't like just a regular $12 bet here or something, or even 15, because that's – or what, 12, 16, because I don't think that's enough. I think we need to go 25-ish. I really do. I think that, you know what, hey, man, you want to straddle, and I'm going to make you pay to straddle that $4. And you guys want to just call when there's a straddle? I'm going to make you pay. So I think 25 is the right amount here.
Yeah, I really want to take – I want to, you know, Billy Club Tanya Harding style, the straddles right across the knees. You know, I don't want him to give him the option of blind raising us from the straddle like these straddle idiots always like to do, right? So right. I'm going to raise more than I normally would here, too. And here's the other thing, too, is 10-10 is actually a vulnerable hand, I think.
Yeah.
You know, I always think it's interesting that people think there's a big difference between 9-9 and 10-10, and there really isn't. I think it's just that it's two numbers instead of one.
It's big.
Like, oh, or it's a Broadway card, so, oh, but really, it's about the same to me. There's a lot of, you know, if Jack, Queen, King, Ace comes on the board, then you don't know what to do with it, right? So I'm not saying that I want to shut it down here, right? But we have a decent amount of money in here. I mean, if I could make, what do you say, 7, 11, 15 bucks every time I have pocket tens, I'd take it.
Yeah, yeah.
And more likely with a decent size rate, I might get one caller somewhere here, and then I can represent a whole wide range of hands, and I'm comfortable doing that versus one player, not so much against four or five. So, yeah, I'm going to go 20. I might even go 30 here just to, you know, hey, I'm my pot.
Yeah, yeah.
I claim it.
Yeah. You know, the other thing, too, there is one other way to play it, obviously, is generally these people who straddle, when it's limped around to them, will make it big. And that's what they love to do. And if that's what the player's pattern has been, then I might consider just calling, watching him make it 25, 30 to go, and then I put in my $100 max bet and laugh at his, you know, queen nine.
Yeah, the problem is he's probably going to call, though, even with his queen nine. So I'd rather not play a huge pot here.
Right, but if I had, like, 200 in front of me,
but
you know what I mean?
Kings or aces, that's what I'm playing.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I would risk the losing the value from him by having him just wrap the table.
Yeah.
To get that opportunity to have him, you know, go crazy and then out crazy him. Yeah. That would be good. But tens, yeah, I'd rather not do it without tens. But I get the idea.
Yeah, I mean, you know that if he does it every single time, he doesn't have a hand every single time. And I think my tens are beating him there. And I'm gonna get that 30 out of him instead of the 4, 4, and 4 that's on the table now. So, but generally, yeah, I'm gonna pop this one a good 25. And you wanted 30, so that I don't really disagree with that either. But I'll go with 25.
Okay. Our hero makes it 16, which I think we both said is probably a little light.
Yeah, a little light.
We've got to get some callers with that, I think, and I'm not looking for callers.
Right.
I'm perfectly fine with caller. But we'll see what happens. Turns out Poker Geek is in this hand.
Hey.
He's in a small blind. You know, this is going to get good, right?
Yeah.
You know, he folds.
Oh! That would have been cool, because I know how to play Poker Geek now. I play with him on the ship, so I know how to play against this guy.
All right, so Poker Geek is out of the way. So it's a big blind. The straddle calls. Doesn't raise, just calls. Hmm. And then our other two limpers also fold.
So it's just us and the straddler.
Us and the straddler. Which I guess if we had got the end result that I was looking for, it's just a heads up.
Yeah.
Though I would have liked to get a little bit more money out of him pre-flop here.
Yeah.
But still, I mean, I'm playing heads up with tens. Can't get much better than that.
Yeah.
Okay, so the flop is ace, five, ace. Still no suits on these cards. We're going to set up some J designs, I think. So they, you know, because every deck of J design playing cards at classicplayingcards.com that I've gotten have suits on them.
Yeah.
All right, so ace, five, ace, and our straddler checks to us.
Huh. All right. Well, I got to bet. I mean, you got to think that if the aces came out, that he probably doesn't have an ace. And so then at that point, the only hands that conceivably are beating us are pocket pairs bigger than us, which I don't know if he would have called with those. Random ace beats us. I guess that, you know, you have to worry about that, I guess. But since there's two, generally you don't. But you would have to worry about a random ace there, and now he's slow playing it. Or worried that you have a bigger ace than him. So it just seems weird that the case aces would come out if he thought we had an ace and he had an ace. So Oh, that's kind of worrisome, but I will definitely bet it. This is a hand that I would definitely bet. I have nothing definitely really to worry bet. About. So there's probably, really? What, 30? Like 30 after
I'm guessing
the rake and everything?
Right. Well, after the rake, yeah, probably 40
yeah,
or so.
Yeah. So I would probably bet about 30 here. If there was 40 in the pot, probably 25, 30, something like that to see where I am.
And yeah. This is a good cop, bad cop kind of flop, I think, for us. I understand the desire to want to continue to bet out of him. If he's kind of a weakish player, if we bet out here, he doesn't have an ace, he's gone, right? And if he has an ace, he's probably going to raise us, and then, you know, kind of know where we are. But this is the kind of flop that I almost think that I'm fine checking behind, which doesn't show weakness, I don't think. Because I think most people would think if you had an ace here, you're going to slow play it, right? Mm. Whether you should or not. So I'm almost fine checking behind, keep the pot a little low, and then see what happens on the turn. And if he bets small, then at that point I might want to see if I can just check call this down. I might decide I want to raise him because I don't believe him. But I don't think this is a definite bet. I'm not saying I would check behind, but I don't think it's a definite bet.
Well, the reason why I think I would bet is because I want to see – this guy may not believe we have an ace, and if he doesn't, he could have something like sevens. And that's why he called. He could, you know what I mean? So there are a lot of hands that would call a bet here that aren't an ace, I think. And
right.
I do want to get value. At the same time, there is one hand that would call that scares the, you know. So,
well, two hands.
Yeah, okay. But really, it's one card that really scares me, and then cards that are over mine, which I don't think are out there. I don't think that's what he has. So
let me ask you this, and I don't really know the answer, but I want to ask. What, besides folding, that your opponent will do to your bet is going to give you information that's going to help you?
Nothing.
You know, so I guess that's what I'm thinking.
But I'm not looking for information. I guess I am when I say I want to bet and see where I am, but I'm just looking for more money. I don't really care about the information. I think right now, I have to think I'm way ahead or way behind, and I'm going to bet. And
okay, so if he raises, do you give him credit for one of the two hands that have us crushed right now?
Maybe, yeah, probably. Probably, because I was the one that made the raise pre-flop, so I'm representing an ace, you know, or at least big cards, and then I'm showing that the aces aren't scary to me, and I'm betting out, and if he raises me then, unless he's a complete maniac, I've got to give him some sort of credit.
He was a straddler, so I'm going to give him credit for being, at least have a maniac gene in him. He may not be a maniac, but...
Yeah. You know, I mean, he could be a good player,
players
too.
Don't straddle.
Right. He could be a good player, too, you know, so I don't
know.
Oh, yeah,
know. Yeah, sure, but he's got a little gamble in him.
Yeah, yeah, I guess
saying.
So. Yeah.
So I could see him, this is what I'd be afraid of about betting and then being raised, is that, the knee jerk is to, all right, give him credit for it, I got to fold now. But if he's got that gamble in him, I got to think he's going to say, why is this guy betting into me? Can't have an ace here, right? I'm going to raise and find out. And raise, and if you fold, ha-ha! I just took this pot from this guy, and if you re-raise, then all right, he definitely has the ace, and I can get out of the way, unless, you know, the ace. And if he just calls, then that's the problem at that point, because then you're forced to act on the turn. But I would think if you got a little gamble here, which a straddler does, I think I would always raise this bet. I would check raise here. And
well, let me ask you this. Let's go back and be back into the hero's shoes again when the guy does check raise you. If you had an ace as the opponent, why would you check raise when you have the ace? And so now me with tens, I would go on the next level and say that.
That's a good point. But then you're back into the straddler's game of chicken, which generally speaking, straddlers are better at chicken than us other people, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, again,
so then he's forcing you to re-raise him light. And I'm sure he's calculating that you're not going to do that. That if you're going to raise, we don't obviously don't know the history here, right? But I would think that's the mindset I think that a straddler would have here, is that this guy's not going to re-raise me without an ace. So
I think you can go either way.
Then he has an ace. Then I know that I'm done with this hand. If he just calls, then obviously I'm a little bit of a pickle because I'm going to have to continue the ruse here. But maybe it works. And if he folds, which I think he is, I just took a nice pot with nothing.
Well, I think since we came up with that idea, we came up with the idea of thinking that this person would not check raise with an ace, then we would, if we can come up with that idea, we can act that way. If we can act that way, then I think that there's no reason why we wouldn't put in that third bet or fourth bet or whatever it is at that point.
Okay, but, so I guess that's what I'm saying. If you're going to bet here, I think you got to be prepared to re-raise.
To re-raise again. Yeah, and I think you do.
If you're not comfortable doing that, then I don't think you should put a bet in here. I think it's safer for you to check behind. You could still represent that ace on the turn, so you're not giving up that. But if you're not capable of re-raising the raise here, then I think it's a problem to bet here.
So are you saying that you would just call down then the rest of the hand? Because if you check there, you're showing weakness. I mean, you're saying that you're afraid of the ace.
I don't think you're really showing weakness here, because if you come alive on the next street, which I think I would do, you know, if because that's the proper play, I think. If we check behind here and then our opponent bets out, now we have to raise on turn. Because now we got to show him, hey, you know, I was just being nice. I was slow playing my ace. I got it. I give you a shot to take a shot at it, and you did, and thank you for that money. I'm going to take it now.
What if the turn is a card over your 10, and then he bets out? Now you just go away?
I guess I'd have to reassess at that point, but...
That's why not getting the value on the first street is a problem, and then you're giving your vulnerable 10s. He could have King-Jack here, and if you check behind, now he hits it and you lose.
True. But whatever he has, we're vulnerable to the next card. Let's say he has pocket threes.
Oh, no, I know, but what I mean is overcards are what you're thinking he's going to call your raise with. And
You just said that he would play this way with a smaller pair, and I totally believe. I totally agree. Yeah.
Right. No, that's true, too. I mean, I'm just saying that then you're not having to guess.
I guess what I'm saying is I'm not scared about that next card. I'm going to my bet is going to be what you're suggesting we bet now.
But on the turn.
Yeah, on the turn. And maybe a raise, obviously. So I mean, the combined bet on the turn, you know, the raise of whatever he's going to put out there is going to be equal to what I was comfortable putting in on the flop and the turn combined. I'm just putting it in on a street later.
So let's say
it should have more effect, I think.
Let's say a queen comes on the turn. He bets 40. You're going to make it 120, and you're comfortable making it 120 with a queen out there and two aces, and you have pocket tens.
I don't know if I go 120. I might just min raise 80. Why do you more than 80?
I don't know. Because I'm thinking that a min raise here, if the guy's willing to bet, is not going to.
Because here's the thing: if he's betting with air, which is what we're assuming he probably is at this point. Hey, this guy thought didn't have an ace because he didn't bet. I'm going to bet out, represent, and then we raise. It doesn't matter what we raise at that point, because now we're showing, hey, we got the ace, and then you know, obviously we got a piece of it at that point. If he got what you're talking about, has King Jack and hits a king. He's probably going to call, but he's probably going to check the river, and then we can check behind at that point if we want to. Get out of his hand for $80. I don't think there's any reason to bet 120 on that, no.
One thing I think you don't understand is that I'm a graduate of the Barry Greenstein School of Poker, and I always continue bet, no matter what. I'm going to continuation bet because I took the lead, I took the power in this hand, and I'm going to bet out. So if I don't bet out, it looks fishy anyway.
Well, yeah, if you're consistent with that, then absolutely.
Yeah. So I don't know how our
I don't know how many people are consistent
Mark
about
plays,
betting
yeah.
out every making yeah. c-bet every single time. But yeah, if you are 100% c-bet all the time, then yeah, the players that are paying attention aren't going to have any idea what you have at that point.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
a fact. But most players aren't that way.
All right, so what are you going to do? Because you haven't really told me yet.
All right, so where are we? I forget where I am.
We're still on the flop. We don't know what kind of turn
you're checking
yet.
Behind. I'm checking behind, and with the intention of betting the turn regardless of what it is, or raising the turn regardless of what it is.
All right. I guess I'm going to bet and see what he does. I would probably bet, like I said, 25 and see what he does to me.
All right. Well, our hero bets 22 to see where he is.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. So
you guys are on the same losing path.
Okay.
and our opponent just calls.
That was a little verbal tell there.
Yeah.
You said just.
Yep.
we're in trouble. I can feel it. You said just. See, now I'm not a mind reader, and I'm not really good at putting people on hands that well, but this smells of an ace. So we better hope it's not ace five.
Yeah, but, you know, this is kind of my problem with the betting, is that really what we're hoping for is a fold.
Yeah.
You know, the call doesn't tell us anything, and now we're going to have to, you know, if it's checked again, do we decide what we're going to do? And I guess at this point, if it's checking me, I'm going to check behind just to keep the pot smaller and not get raised at that point. But then you lose that value, which is what you're talking about. You're trying to get value on each street, right?
Yeah, because you're saying, before, you were positive that you were going to bet you were going to check, and then on the turn, if he bet, you were going to raise him. Now right. You're talking about hoping he folds or calling behind. You changed your mind.
No, I'm not changing my mind at all. We're doing what you guys decided to do, which is bet out. This is why I didn't want to bet out.
Oh, okay.
So now called. So now what do I do? Now what do you do on the next street?
So now if he bets the next street, you're not raising.
What do you do in the next street now?
It depends. If he checks, I bet. If he
all right. If he bets, what he's going to call?
I'll just call. Depending on the card too. The card.
And then if that's more on the river, you got to call that too. That's what I'm talking about. It's that point you got to commit to,
right,
two streets of calling, yeah. Not knowing whether you're ahead or behind. And that's a problem for me.
Well, I don't think you ever really know.
No, you never really know. But I'd like to be the one that's casting a doubt rather than being the one trying to figure out the doubt.
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to fold. Not yet, at least. I mean, when the guy tells me he just calls, I'm worried, but I have to play it the way I would play it, not because he told me he just calls.
All right, well, let's assume he didn't say just calls. He just says he calls.
Yeah, if he calls.
Right, so you're good fixating on the just.
No, I know. And
which
so,
you should, because that's how the hand of the week works out.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is, if he just calls, doesn't say just calls, he calls.
Right.
Now, the problem is that we don't know whether he doesn't believe us. We don't know whether he has an ace. We just don't know, so I don't know how to really react to whatever he does on the turn.
Right,
because if he checks, then yeah, probably I'm going to bet again, and if he calls, not just calls again, then I'm going to have to slow down the river and hope that he checks again and gives me a free look, and that's what I'll do. But
it could be 6-6.
Feel much more powerful here if it wasn't in this situation at this point.
It could be 6-6 through 9-9, 8-8 or something like that too, and that's somebody who has that hand would probably just call the raise preflop, would probably just check call, and then see if he checks again. If you give up on the turn, then he thinks he's good and he'll bet out the river. So it depends, you know. But let's just see what happens. We both made our move, so let's see the turn.
All right, the turn is the 10 of clubs. So we finally have a card with a suit on it.
when it least matters the most.
So obviously we voted up here, and it is checked to us.
Okay.
I guess I should go back for our driving folks. Our board now is ace, five, ace, 10 of clubs.
Yeah. Well, obviously that doesn't hit any draws for him, so it really didn't change his hand. It's funny that I might even consider checking now. Because now, if he checks to us, is that what you said? Yeah.
Yeah.
So if I might even consider, believe it or not, I might consider checking here to let him bluff
the river.
Yeah.
I like that.
Or if he has a random ace now, you know, like ace nine.
Yeah. I mean, I think at this point, I don't think you can go wrong now because you got lucky with one of these two cards, or I should say, variance caught up to us with one of the two cards that really makes our hand better.
Yeah.
I think you'd go either way here. I think you could bet. And if he didn't believe you in the flop and he was trying to set you up now, well, now you got a hand that's almost surely beating him, right?
Yeah.
You know, unless he happens to have ace five. Right.
Or ace ten.
Well, yeah.
Case ten.
Yeah.
But yeah, yeah.
So then you can play back at him. Or you could do what you're suggesting, which I kind of like too, is just checking behind as if, oh, I didn't have the ace. I bet you called. You must have the ace. I'm not going to give you another dime.
Yeah.
And then have a bet on the river and go, booyah! You're right, I don't have another ace, but I got these three pretty tens. So I don't think you can go wrong here.
Yeah.
Other than folding. Which I actually saw somebody fold when they didn't need to at the charity event, too. They keep bringing it up, and you're like, alright.
Well,
he was a good player. I'm not a good player, but he's a regular player. He's in every one of those events. But anyway.
Here's the deal. You know, the most you can get out of somebody now is $100, unless you're going to raise, and then he's going to... You know what I mean? It would be hard to imagine somebody... You guys going back and forth with $100 bets here at any point in this hand now, given that the board is paired, and unless somebody has quads, another person, you know what I mean? So, and I definitely don't see that. So, I don't really mind the check here. If I did bet and he raised me, then I'd probably get it in or whatever, make the most of my can of the bet because, I got tens full, and no matter what happens, I don't think I can fold this hand. You know, if it were playing for $1 million, I could fold the hand, but not for
right,
not for a $100 bet in this game. So, but I kind of like to check because I feel like if I bet now, he could fold with nothing, believing me, and then I get nothing out of him. But the story I'm telling is that I'm afraid now, and he might bet the river, and then I can get out of him. So, I like to check here just and people will probably get mad because we want to value bet your full house and hoping he has a random ace. But, you know, if he had a random ace at this point, you'd think he would wake up and bet it. Because yeah,
I don't think there's much difference here of whether we bet or not, the more I think about it. So
let's check behind and see what happens on the river. That's what I would do. But, of course, I don't think he's going to do that.
All right, well, our hero bets 40. And our opponent asks how much it was, and we say 40, and he calls.
Okay, so, you know, it still feels, now it definitely feels like a random ace. Because if you're, even with the 10 coming up, the guy had sixes through nines, he's got to be worried about something here. So why is he still calling? You know, if he was in position, it'd be one thing, you're thinking he's floating you, and he's going to steal it when you finally show weakness. But you haven't shown any weakness the whole way through. He has to have an ace now. And we have to be worried about it being ace 5 or ace 10, and he's just slow playing walking on us as a dog. So that's
or ace whatever the river is, which would be the other.
Yeah, well, yeah, I don't know what that is yet. But right now, we have to worry about that. Because why is he calling 40 and 22 and 16 with nothing? You know, we're in position, so he can't float us. It's not like we're going to show weakness now. Now it's too late to do it. He should have come alive on that turn if he was going to bluff us. And so by calling now, I'm a little worried. I think if he bets the river, I'm just calling. And if he checks the river, I'm checking behind, believe it or not. I may actually check behind. I'm a little scared here. I mean, I guess I'd have to look to see what kind of reaction he gets to the river, but I'm really worried. Why is he calling again? Because he's not floating us. He can't reverse float or whatever.
This is what's tough with online or the hand of the week without being able to see the guy here. Because I need to know whether he's Hollywooding here. If the how much was a legitimate request, then I'm not as scared.
Yeah.
But if I get the sense that he's trying to win a Spirit Award here, the next independent film festival, then I'm going to be like, all right, I'll let you. If you're going to check the river, I'm going to check behind and be happy taking this down if I'm wrong, but I'm not going to play your game anymore. And that's tough to say in the hand of the week because we can't really tell.
Yeah. And the other thing, too, is I don't know how much we had to start with this hand. So I don't know, you know, how much I've been betting all this time. If it's been a third of my stack, it's been a half of my stack. If I'm going to bet half my stack, I might as well put it all in, you know. So I don't know how much we have. Do we have 600?
Yeah, it looks like we have 52 behind after our $40 bet.
Oh, okay. Well, then I can't fold to any bet, so I might as well just put it in there. I mean, that's the thing, is if somebody bets 40 now on the river,
I'm
not
folding. Yeah, I guess that makes – I wish we would have known the big – because that changes the betting here a little bit.
Yeah.
Because now your turn bet is dependent on whether you think – anything less than the 92 is going to get a call.
Yeah.
Versus the 92. If you think the 92 is going to get a call, might as well put it all in here now. But if you don't think it is, then you can split it up. But yeah, it's all going in. So I guess it just matters on whether you think you're going to get more out of them.
Yeah, 52 left. Yeah, I might have bet or thought differently throughout the hand if I knew I only had about 100 bucks to start. Okay. Well, anyway, yeah, I am kind of worried that he called that $40. So on the river, if he doesn't bet, I think I might just check.
Yeah, save that $52.
Yeah, I might save that $52 and say, hey, I'm happy with this $80, $90 pot or whatever, $100 pot, whatever it is, and then move on. Because what does that call mean to me? Why would he keep calling? He has to have an ace, but it feels like he could have us beat now. And I mean, it's the end of the week. That's what makes me think that. I don't know. But at the end, if he checks, I would probably consider. I don't know though. I might just put it in. It's only $52 now. I mean, I don't know. It's not like at the tournament. You know, I could buy in again and say, "Oh, good hand." You know, cooler. But I don't know. All right. So he bet 40. The guy called. That call really scares me.
Yeah.
So that's why I might just check behind, even though it's not that much money.
All right. Well, the river is a king. So our final board is ace, five, ace, ten of clubs, king. And our opponent checks to us.
Okay, let's check.
Yeah, at this point, yeah. I mean, he's just got us confuddled. So, I mean, the fact that if that was his game was to confuddle us, well played. It's an extra whatever I'm not going to get out of you. But I'd rather have 52 left in my stack than nothing at this point.
Yeah.
Versus the whatever I'm going to get the overall pot here.
Yeah.
All right, well, our hero decides to chuck it in, so he throws the $52 in. Our opponent calls. We obviously turn over our full house, and he turns over ace five.
Flops it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes total sense now the whole way through. Oh. You know, and he had to be a little worried about Ace King, this guy, not our hero, but the other guy when the king came.
Yeah.
You know, he had to be a little worried about Ace King or Ace 10 there, but...
Yeah, and that's one of our questions for Mark, is that he says, if this had been true no limit and I had 200 bucks or so on the river and went all in, do I get called?
I still think so. I, you know, again, it's a cooler that the king comes to give him ace king full. You know, I don't know. I think he still gets called.
Yeah, I think so still. Too.
Plus, the amount of money that's in the pot already is like over 200, you know, or close to, I'm over 100, but, you know, at the end, you put in 100. You know, that was 200 in the pot for, you know, and he's got a full house. He's not going anywhere. Ace is full.
Right.
There's
right.
just no way he's going anywhere in the off chance you have ace 10 or ace king. But.
Yeah, and to be honest, I'm kind of glad that we didn't know where our chip stacks were at the beginning, because I think the hand we would have played it differently knowing that. Yeah. But I think it ended up being a more valuable hand playing it
without
thinking
knowing
that we had infinity.
Yeah.
Because at this point, if I knew I only had that, I mean, I'm like, you know. Particularly when once I get to 10, you know, it's not even a question at that point. But even before that, you know, the way this guy's playing it, I'm sure I'm going to get it in at some point. So,
all right, good hand. I wish Poker Geek was involved, because I would have had much more valuable information for you guys. But, all right, Mark, thanks for sending that in. All right, good show. Glad to have you back, Scott. And don't forget, we're going on a cruise next week. So our show will probably be posted over the weekend at some point, either late Saturday or early Sunday. And then we'll get back to O'Malley's Move the following week. So I'm Chris Costanza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.